When a constitutional convention to draft a balance the budget constitutional amendment was first proposed, it was steamrolled through one state legislature after another. At that time, most Americans were unaware of the constitutional dangers.
Stop the presses.
Hello, my name is Bill Walker. I am a co-founder of Friends of the Article 5 Convention, FOAVC. We are a nonpartisan group dedicated to informing people about an Article 5 convention and to correct the misstatements, myths, and yes, outright lies about an Article 5 convention. You've been listening to the opening remarks of a 1989 recording by Richard Ward Fatherly entitled The Constitutional Convention Con Game. We have edited nothing in this recording. However, when Mr. Fatherly states something that is either a falsehood, a half-truth, or otherwise is a misleading statement, you will hear us interrupt him with our Stop the Presses audio. We will then tell you this misstatement, explain the true facts, and then allow Mr. Fatherly to continue his 1989 recording. So, if Mr. Fatherly is telling the entire truth about an Article 5 convention, this should be the last interruption you should hear for this entire audio. Oh, by the way, did you know that in 1989, Mr. Fatherly was a member in good standing of the John Birch Society, an extreme right-wing fringe organization who politically opposed the balanced budget amendment? Did you know that all of the myths, lies, and misstatements about an Article 5 convention can be traced directly back to this single extremist organization? Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
But as the understanding grew, so too has the resistance. Most Americans learned that such a convention cannot be limited to a specific subject.
Stop the presses!
A convention cannot be limited to a single subject? This is a threat to our nation and should be opposed? Let's look at the factual record. I'm going to read a part of Article 5 of the Constitution. Quote, "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof." Note the word amendments, not amendment. Both the convention and Congress have the identical constitutional power to propose amendments. Now somehow, Mr. Fatherly and the John Birch Society would have you believe that it is in some way evil that amendments can be proposed to the Constitution. For example, Congress proposed amendments when it proposed the Bill of Rights. According to Mr. Fatherly, this is wrong.
Does he mean we should never amend the Constitution?
Keep it just as it was when it was written in 1789? I guess then that means that he would oppose the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery, or the 19th Amendment, granting women the right to vote, just to cite two examples of change by amendment in our nation. The fact is, Congress has hundreds of amendment proposals submitted to it each year. And just like a convention will do, only a few, if any, are ever proposed for ratification consideration. And remember, all Congress and a convention can do is propose amendments.
If it's not ratified, it's not part of the Constitution. And notice, Mr. Fatherly forgot to mention that Congress has the exact same power he seems so afraid of. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
And that powerful forces hope to use such a convention to radically change our form of government.
Stop the presses!
And that powerful forces hope to use such a convention to radically change our form of government. Sounds sinister, doesn't it? But remember, there are two forms of amendment proposal, a convention and Congress. Just how powerful are these unnamed forces that only by acting through an unsuspecting convention can they succeed? So are we to presume these powerful forces have no influence in Congress, because, by the admission of Mr. Fatherly, they can only succeed at a convention. If so, how can we presume they would have any more influence in a convention than they have already demonstrated they lack in Congress? If they had such influence as Mr. Fatherly suggests, isn't it reasonable to assume they would have already caused a convention to be called in order to carry out their sinister purpose? All political groups, powerful or not, seek to benefit to themselves and their beliefs, not to others and their beliefs. Hence, doesn't it make sense that if a powerful force desired radical change in our form of government, they would do that deed as expeditiously as possible so as to benefit from that change as soon as possible? Why would a powerful force pin its hope for success on a method of amendment which can only be caused by the action of a political body of which it has absolutely no influence on, that is, Congress? Since this powerful force has no ability to influence the calling of a convention by Congress, and without such a call there is no convention, is not what Mr. Fatherly actually saying that these supposedly powerful forces are pinning their expectations for success on a method of amendment they have no ability to ensure will occur? Doesn't it make more sense to suggest that by Mr. Fatherly implying a sinister motive behind those who wish to use a legal, constitutional alternative to the usual congressional method of amendment proposal, where Congress has been unresponsive, he is actually trying to discredit that method of amendment? Thus, all power of amendment is kept in Congress, where the history of influence by special interest groups, such as the John Birch Society, is well known. Thus, by discrediting the Article 5 Convention, the John Birch Society and other powerful forces can completely control the amendment agenda of the Constitution, and thus the Constitution itself. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Consequently, not a single state has called for a convention since 1983.
Stop the presses.
This is a lie. According to the Congressional Record, the official government repository for Article 5 convention applications by the states, a total of 11 applications were received from 1983 to 1989 when Mr. Fatherly made his recording. Missouri applied twice in 1983 for a balanced budget amendment, bringing the total number of applications for that particular amendment to 38 states. In 1984, Arizona applied twice for a line-item veto amendment. South Dakota did the same in 1986. Utah applied twice in 1987 for a taxation on debts amendment, and in 1989, South Dakota, Idaho, and Nevada submitted applications for an Article 5 convention. Mr. Fatherly didn't mention that the total number of applying states for a convention is, according to the Congressional Record and recently confirmed in a 2006 federal lawsuit at the Supreme Court, 50 states. These states have submitted a total of 567 applications for a convention, far in excess of the 34 needed to cause Congress to call an Article 5 convention. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
And Alabama and Florida have withdrawn their previous calls for a constitutional convention.
Stop the presses.
Let's get the record straight. In a few moments, Mr. Fatherly will discuss how he worked to have Florida withdraw its 1976 application for a balanced budget amendment. The problem is, the Congressional Record shows there is no 1976 application by Florida for an Article 5 convention. There is record of a rescission in 1988 by Florida, but no 1976 application. In any event, the rescission only applied to the 1988 application made by Florida, leaving its two applications made in 1979 for a balanced budget intact. Now, as to Alabama, there was a 1976 rescission of a balanced budget amendment application, but the state sent in two applications in 1979 for a balanced budget amendment, meaning neither rescission by either state affected anything as to the applications for a convention. So much for the effect of Mr. Fatherly's efforts. beyond which these so-called rescissions did not affect the other 14 applications by Alabama for a convention on other subjects, nor the other 18 applications by the state of Florida for a convention on other subjects. Now let's discuss this idea of withdrawal of amendment applications by the states for just a moment. According to Mr. Fatherly, the states have a right to rescind their applications whenever they choose. According to him, enough states rescind their application, this prevents an Article 5 convention call. The problem is, there is no such language allowing this action by the states anywhere in the Constitution. In fact, the congressional record shows clearly that a sufficient number of states to satisfy the two-thirds requirement applied for a convention long ago, before any rescission was received by Congress. So this means in simple terms that Congress, as required by Article 5, must call, as two-thirds of the states have applied, or the states have the right to veto the law of the Constitution. The answer is obvious. Article 5 has been satisfied and contains no language authorizing any withdrawal of any application. Therefore, these withdrawals or rescissions are unconstitutional and invalid. Think of it this way. Imagine there is a close race for a political office in your town. The margin of difference between the two candidates is 32 votes. You favor the candidate that lost. You want him to win. So, the day after the election result is announced, you and 32 of your other friends decide to go down to the county election office and announce you are withdrawing your votes in the election. You state you all voted for the candidate that won. Since you are withdrawing 33 votes from that candidate, you demand the other candidate, the one you favored, be put in office because his vote count now is more than the other candidate received, thanks, of course, to your withdrawals. All of you know what the answer would be. Once a vote is cast, it is cast, be it in an election, a vote in Congress, a decision by a judge, or a veto by the president. No one is allowed to simply withdraw their vote, or in this case, an application, once it has been cast. To allow otherwise would be utter chaos in our governmental system. Mr. Fatherly proposes a principle of law that simply doesn't exist in this country. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Well-informed Americans must guard against a constitutional convention. Why? Because our United States Constitution is the very foundation of our freedoms. A constitutional convention will place those freedoms at risk for us and future generations.
Stop the presses!
We have to guard against a constitutional convention. Notice how Mr. Fatherly now subtly renames an Article 5 convention, or as it is phrased in the Constitution, a convention to propose amendments, clearly indicating its limited purpose and intent, that of proposing amendments to the current Constitution and no more, with a more provocative phrase, the Constitutional Convention. Thus he sets his stage, all undocumented, of course, that this new title magically bestows new powers on the Article 5 Convention. Have you noticed yet that Mr. Fatherly has not referred to one shred of documented evidence to substantiate any of his allegations? He names no sources of law, such as court rulings or federal legislation, to prove his statements. He cites no law review articles written by noted judicial authorities. He doesn't even cite the founders themselves. Of course, he can't cite them because they favored a convention. By the way, did you know there have been numerous conventions held in various nations throughout the world, as well as in many of our states, since the 1789 convention? Did you know not one of these conventions has ever done anything that Mr. Fatherly has alleged a convention will do? And isn't it interesting that he suggests that obeying the law of the Constitution is somehow going to be a threat to our lives, but not obeying it will not be? What is the difference between not obeying the law of the Constitution to ensure that a defendant is not compelled to testify against himself at trial, and not obeying that same law in order to hold what is, in its simplest terms, a committee meeting to draft proposed changes to that law? Both are disobedience.
By such action, the law is rendered meaningless, and I am sure that even Mr. Fatherly would concede not having a constitution in effect at all is a greater threat to our security than having an amendment proposed that can be ignored should not a supermajority of us citizens not wish it to take effect in the Constitution. Mr. Fatherly obviously believes the law of the Constitution is like a salad. Those who do not like a particular slice of lettuce can toss it out whenever they please. Such is not the case. The Constitution is like a magnificent broth, full of rich and pleasing flavors, blended together into the finest taste imaginable. To remove even the slightest bit of flavor cheapens the entire dish. The framers of the Constitution put the Article 5 Convention in their Constitution for an obvious purpose: to allow the people to amend their sovereign document without national government interference. It is part of the check and balance system of our Constitution, which keeps all powers in check, guaranteeing our continued freedom. Not using an Article 5 Convention, and thus placing all power in the hands of the national government, which is obviously what Mr. Fatherly seeks, is the real threat to our freedom. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
My presentation is divided into four parts. Part one discusses the Constitution and the amendments process. There are two ways to amend it: from the Congress to the states, the congressional amendments process, and through an Article 5 convention known as a constitutional convention.
Stop the presses.
As already explained, the convention is either called an Article 5 convention or, to quote the Constitution, a convention to propose amendments. It is not a constitutional convention, nor is it called one in the Constitution. That is Mr. Fatherly's term, and it is inaccurate. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
In part four of my presentation, I'll review what we did in Florida to withdraw that state's 1976 memorial calling for a constitutional convention, how we did it, and what you must do here to accomplish the same objective.
Stop the presses.
As I've already explained, there was no 1976 Article 5 convention application from Florida. But the state of Alabama did submit an invalid, unconstitutional rescission for a 1975 application. The point is, not only does Mr. Fatherly lie with unsubstantiated allegation, but doesn't even know which state he was in when he did all that he claims he did. The congressional record proves this. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Part two reviews the balance the budget question. Part 3 identifies several of the powerful forces which seek to radically change our form of government from what we have to what they want, and why they want to do it. Also in Part 3, I'll touch on an effective marketing technique known as positioning, and how that technique is being used to dupe conservative, traditional-minded Americans into playing the Constitutional Convention con game.
Stop the presses.
So Mr. Fatherly believes that citizens participating in a legal, constitutional method to alter their form of government, which contains numerous safeguards so as to prevent any mischief he so obviously fears, is somehow a con game. I assume, then, he means that the founding fathers of this nation were con artists, and therefore the Constitution itself is some sort of scam on the American people. The only con game that's being played here is the one Mr. Fatherly and the John Birch Society are playing on the American public. They play on the fear they have created themselves. They are chicken littles screaming the constitutional sky will fall in if we obey that law and have a convention. Notice Mr. Fatherly offers no solutions for these fears. He only fans them. The con game is that the John Birch Society and Mr. Fatherly want you to believe you are incapable of governing yourself and making your decisions as to what is best for you. So instead, why not leave that up to Mr. Fatherly and the John Birch Society to decide for you what is best for you, and decide if you will exercise your constitutional rights? Now that is a con game. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Let's begin part one of this presentation by reviewing how the Constitution of the United States is amended. As I mentioned earlier, there are two ways to do it: through the Congressional Amendments process, or by way of an Article 5 Constitutional Convention.
Stop the presses.
Now Mr. Fatherly calls it an Article 5 Constitutional Convention. I will again state the Constitution refers to an Article 5 Convention as, quote, a convention for proposing amendments, unquote. And there is a reason for that title. I quote from Article 5, quote, "The Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments, in which case shall be valid for all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified," unquote. Note that phrase, "as part of this Constitution." A constitutional convention writes an entirely new constitution. It replaces the old constitution. It is not part of the old constitution. But an Article 5 convention, as authorized by Article 5 in our current constitution, can only write an amendment as part of our present constitution. The present Constitution, by this stipulation of Article 5, must remain intact, and therefore it is unconstitutional for an Article 5 convention to write a new Constitution, because that new Constitution would not be part of our present Constitution. Again, Mr. Fatherly deliberately ignores the facts and spreads a lie. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
The Congressional Amendments process requires two-thirds of the Congress, the House and the Senate, to approve the release of an amendment to America's 50 state legislatures for consideration, debate, and, if they approve it, for ratification. Three-quarters of the states, or 38 of today's 50 states, must agree to the amendment before it becomes part of the Constitution. Sometimes the required 38 states don't agree with the amendment and fail to ratify it before the deadline, as was the case with the misunderstood Equal Rights Amendment of the 1970s.
Stop the presses.
For once, Mr. Fatherly is nearly accurate to this point in describing the amendment process, but fails to note that any deadline for ratification is placed in the amendment by the proposing body. When Mr. Fatherly made this recording in 1989, it would be three more years before the 28th Amendment to the Constitution would be ratified by the states. Congress proposed that amendment in 1791, but set no deadline for its ratification. Modern practice has been for Congress to establish a seven-year limit for ratification, and it is likely a convention will do the same. This practice therefore means that a convention's amendment proposals will have a limited lifespan, meaning that opponents to any radical change in our Constitution will have an added advantage, the clock, which will always be working in their favor, as the ERA amendment shows. Because the ERA was not ratified in the seven-year lifetime span set forth in the amendment proposal, it is completely dead. It would have to be re-proposed by either a convention or Congress in order to be reconsidered for ratification, and any vote by any state taken before would not count in any such new ratification effort. Mr. Fatherly is therefore pointing out another constitutional safeguard that exists for both congressional as well as convention amendment proposals. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
The other way to amend the Constitution is through a constitutional convention.
Stop the presses.
You'll notice that Mr. Fatherly has now completely ignored the actual name of the convention, and thus the purpose expressed in Article 5. This, of course, is intentional, and of course is a lie. From this point forward in the recording, you'll begin to hear a pile of lies by Mr. Fatherly, built one upon another. Some of these lies we will not address. The reason for this is that FOAVC is a nonpartisan organization. As such, we do not advocate any particular amendment proposal. This being the case, we will make no comments regarding Mr. Fatherly's remarks concerning a balanced budget amendment proposal, except where such remarks involve an Article 5 convention or are used to distort the truth about an Article 5 convention. However, I must point something out. So far, by my count, I've had to correct the lies of Mr. Fatherly 11 times in a recording time amounting in the original to no more than 5 minutes in length. That's about one lie every 30 seconds, or about one lie every other sentence. Given this fact, and the fact the obvious intent of Mr. Fatherly is to politically defeat an amendment proposal, I urge the listener to be on guard. Rather than attack the proposal itself, he and the John Birch Society decided to attack the Constitution and its legal processes. To accomplish this defeat of that proposal, they have spread lies about the process. If Mr. Fatherly is willing to lie about the process, is it not reasonable to assume he might not also lie about the proposal itself? I urge the listener, therefore, to be warned, and not to assume just because FOAVC has not made a comment that the statements made by Mr. Fatherly are true. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
This procedure requires 2/3 of the states, or 34 of today's 50 state legislatures, to petition the Congress to hold a convention. The only convention of this type occurred in 1787 to amend the Articles of Confederation.
Stop the presses.
It's one thing to lie about facts that some people might not know, but it's quite another to lie about history, which everyone knows, and have the arrogance to assume you will get away with it. Mr. Fatherly, in his obvious arrogance, believes he can lie about history and get away with it. It is a matter of history that from the time of our independence in 1783 until the Constitution was adopted in 1788, our nation was governed not by the Constitution, but by the Articles of Confederation. The 1787 Constitutional Convention was authorized under the Articles of Confederation and its amendment procedure, which is not the same as the amendment procedure described in the Constitution. It was authorized under the Articles of Confederation because the Constitution didn't exist and wouldn't become the supreme law of our land for nearly 2 years after the conclusion of the 1787 convention. Therefore, any statement that an Article 5 convention, as authorized by the Constitution, has only been called once to amend the Articles of Confederation is a lie, because the Article 5 Convention didn't exist and couldn't possibly have been used to amend the Articles of the Confederation. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
This convention succeeded in scrapping the Articles of Confederation and instead wrote the Constitution as we know it today.
Stop the presses!
This lie was perpetrated by the John Birch Society and Mr. Fatherly and designed to make people believe the 1787 Constitutional Convention suddenly grabbed power and wrote the Constitution on their own authority, and that if people are foolish enough to allow another convention, it could do the same thing, and therefore we must guard against this danger. This is a lie based on a lie. As I've already shown, the Article 5 Convention has safeguards in it designed to prevent such mischief as Mr. Fatherly would have everyone believe. And notice, he entirely ignores these safeguards in constructing his house of fear. Now let's turn to his statement that the 1787 Convention scrapped the Articles of Confederation, implying, of course, that this was done by the authority of the Convention itself. Let me quote first from the Articles of Confederation. Article 13 of the Articles of Confederation states, "The Articles of this Confederation shall be inviolably observed by every state, and the Union shall be perpetual." nor shall any alteration at any time hereafter be made in any of them, unless such alteration be agreed to in a Congress of the United States, and be afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state. Now let me quote from the Act of Congress written February 21, 1787, authorizing the calling of the 1787 Constitutional Convention under the Articles of Confederation, authorized by Article 13 of those articles. Of course, Mr. Fatherly deliberately ignores this record in his fear-mongering. Quote, "Whereas there is provision in the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union for making alterations therein by the assent of a Congress of the United States and of the legislatures of the several states, resolved that in the opinion of Congress it is expedient that on the second Monday in May next a convention of delegates who shall have been appointed by the several states be held at Philadelphia for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union." Unquote. The Congress therefore authorized that the Articles of Confederation in toto be amended, altered, or changed by recommendation of the 1787 convention. In sum, it handled more than one subject because there was more than one article. As authorized by the Articles of Confederation, the 1787 convention was held in compliance with that law, and as specified by the law, was required to, quote, render the federal Constitution adequate to the Union. In other words, the convention did exactly what the law required it to do, no more, no less. Further, there was no mention, or could there ever be, mention of an Article 5 convention because it had yet to be created. And finally, if you take time to read the Articles of Confederation and compare it to the Constitution, you will find many portions of the Confederation still remain in the Constitution. The articles were, as described, altered, not scrapped. Let me be blunt. Mr. Fatherly's main argument as to why an Article 5 convention should not be held is based on a lie which he and the John Birch Society perpetrated, that the convention assumed power it was not supposed to have. The facts are plain. The convention operated and was authorized by Congress and the states, and it obeyed that law precisely. This is a lie, as is Mr. Fatherly's argument a convention could assume power. The convention, as anyone can plainly read in Article 5, has many safeguards to prevent such mischief as Mr. Fatherly has created and lied about. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Under Article 5 of our United States Constitution, Congress may call a constitutional convention upon application of two-thirds of the states, and a constitutional convention shall propose amendments.
Stop the presses!
Mr. Fatherly now assumes by his comments that people can't read. Article 5 clearly states Congress shall call a convention, not may call a convention. According to Alexander Hamilton in Federalist 85, the call is peremptory on Congress. This was recently affirmed in the lawsuit I mentioned earlier by the United States government. In this way, the sovereign right of the people to alter their form of government is preserved. Of course, the intent of Mr. Fatherly is obvious. If he makes people think a convention call is optional by lying about the words in Article 5, which is what he's done, then obviously he can then suggest even if the states have applied for a convention, the law of the Constitution can be ignored. Thus, Mr. Fatherly and the John Birch Society urge, in fact, the Constitution can be thwarted or vetoed. Of course, obviously all of this is done to benefit the John Birch Society and Mr. Fatherly. Note again he uses the wrong term to describe an Article 5 convention, trying to tie this legal constitutional procedure with a lie he has already constructed earlier. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Such a convention may not be limited to a single amendment issue. Constitutional scholars agree. Charles Allen Wright, School of Law at the University of Texas in Austin, says this, quote, "My own belief is that a constitutional convention cannot be confined to a particular subject," unquote. Professor Neil H. Kogan of the School of Law at Southern Methodist University says, quote, "My understanding of the Federal Convention is that it is a general convention, that neither the Congress nor the states may limit the amendments to be considered and proposed by the convention," unquote. Lawrence H. Tribe, Tyler Professor of Constitutional Law at Harvard University, comments, quote, "The discretion with which Congress may discharge this duty is pregnant with danger, even under the most salutary conditions," unquote. And still more comment. Gerald Gunther, William Nelson Cromwell Professor of Law at Stanford Law School, says this, quote, "In my view, a convention cannot be effectively limited," unquote. Professor Christopher Brown of the University of Maryland Law School says, quote, "In my view, the plurality of amendments opens the door to constitutional change far beyond merely requiring a balanced federal budget," unquote. Jefferson B. Fordham of the University of Utah's College of Law put it this way, quote, "A convention might propose a single amendment, but it would clearly have a wider range," unquote. Dr. Charles E. Rice, professor of law at Notre Dame University, said this, quote, "It is doubtful that Congress has the power to limit the convention to the proposal of amendments only on a single subject," unquote. And Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, retired, the Honorable Warren Burger, said, quote, "I have repeatedly given my opinion that there is no effective way to limit or muzzle the actions of a constitutional convention," unquote.
Stop the presses.
I'm fairly certain these quotes were not taken out of context, though Mr. Fatherly does not provide any references where this possibility could be verified. Considering he has already lied many times in this recording, prudence dictates they be viewed with caution. The fact is, all of these quotes from these learned and distinguished men can be equally applied to Congress. The Supreme Court, in Coleman v. Miller, a 1939 decision, made it clear that Congress can also discuss any subject of amendment it wishes, and that there is no one that has any control on that process either. So, all Mr. Fatherly is saying is that, like Congress, an Article 5 convention may discuss any amendment subject it wishes and propose any amendment subject it desires. How else would you expect the founders of our nation, who realized they could never predict all of the subjects that might require amendment in the future, to set up the amendment system? Obviously, for the amendment system to work, it must have the capacity to deal with whatever problem or subject it needs to in order to resolve that problem. Any limits set by the founders would, of course, made this fact impossible. Of course, as usual, Mr. Fatherly leaves out important facts. First, both kinds of proposals face ratification in order to take effect. Secondly, like Congress, a convention will not exist nor operate in a political vacuum. In order to get an amendment proposal ratified, it will require broad political support. This support will be, as are all political movements, supported in a specific area at a specific time. Thus, while a convention may be able to discuss any subject of amendment, the political realities of support for that proposal will limit amendment proposals to a small number, if not a single amendment proposal, because political support for the ratification process will only exist for that particular subject. Thus, just because a convention can propose a number of amendments doesn't mean it will. In fact, the realities of our political system mean it will never do that, just as Congress, who can propose any amendment subject it wants, has only proposed one amendment at a time in response to the political movements at the time of the proposal. The fear Mr. Fatherly raises, political reality has shown many times, simply doesn't exist. Please continue, Mr. Fatherly.
Perhaps that's why the Nevada State Assembly expunged or removed from its 1979 Assembly Journal its prior call for a constitutional convention. It did so June 24, 1989, saying that its 1979 call for a constitutional convention had been, quote, induced by fraud, unquote. They learned that a constitutional convention cannot be limited to a single amendment issue.
Stop the presses!
Apparently, Mr. Fatherly now suggests that the rescission of Nevada was made because there was a, quote, fraud, unquote, that the state legislature wasn't aware of, and this so-called fraud was that an Article 5 convention, note that Mr. Fatherly now is using the term constitutional convention, might discuss more than one subject. How is this fraud? Where is anyone deceived regarding anything? Article 5 clearly allows for more than one amendment subject to be discussed by either convention or Congress. Either body may propose more than one subject. So what? There is still the ratification process, and if the state of Nevada has concerns that somehow an amendment proposal is a fraud, they simply vote against ratification of that amendment, and all they have to do is get a small minority of states to go along with them, and the proposal is defeated. The Bill of Rights, a total of 10 amendments, was proposed by Congress simultaneously in 1791, and it contains numerous subjects in those 10 amendments. According to Mr. Fatherly, the Bill of Rights must therefore be a fraud, because more than one subject is discussed and was proposed by Congress. It is known that those states who have submitted invalid, unconstitutional rescissions of Article 5 convention applications did so only after one group, the John Birch Society, brought political pressure on the state legislature in the form of lies, mistruth, misstatements, and falsehoods such as you are now hearing. No state where the John Birch Society lies have been ignored or where that group has no political influence has withdrawn a single state application for an Article 5 convention. This rescission movement is truly the effort of a single, small, right-wing organization bent on the destruction of the Constitution by establishing that that supreme law may be vetoed and are willing to lie about that law in order to achieve their political goals.